Live from the Xfinity Studios at WVON. We're your original social media. You're listening to A Doctor in the House with Dr. Terry Mason on 1690, The Talk of Chicago.
Show The Doctor in the House, heard right every Sunday right here at AM 1690 WVON. You know, Dr. Watson, who is our co-host today on every first Sunday, but I think about that song, you know, when we selected that song to be the song for the show, and I've used it every show for I can't tell you how many
years. I was going to ask you how long.
It's been a long time, because I think it's an appropriate song.
It's still relevant.
It's still a relevant song. You know, wake up everybody, no more sleeping. I mean, we got to wake up, and that's the purpose of this show, is to wake us up from ignorance.
Yep.
You know, and I'm not, you know, ignorance means you just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's all it means. And so what our job is, and what I appreciate that you do, is bring to us guests that can tell us things about things we think we may know, but maybe we don't know. And can give people information about what they need to do from an expert point of view, you know, because some of us, you know, we want to make sure that people get the, as we used to say in the Nation of Islam, we want to make sure that people get the actual facts.
That's right.
The actual facts. You know, there's a lot of stuff, but these are the actual facts. Now, this is not church, so what we're talking about here is not what you believe, it's what we know. And so this is what we are going on here, and that's what we try to do, is make sure we push forth stuff that we know. So, again, I want to introduce the co-host for today, Dr. Kareem Watson, who is not – you're the director now for
no,
Miles Square?
No, not yet.
Huh?
I'm still on the job training. Mr. Taylor is still leading us very well,
right.
And I am under his tutelage and learning something new every day.
Well, you know, I'm grateful that, you know, it's kind of interesting because UI, University of Illinois, is my alma mater,
mm-hmm.
for our medical school. And it's always good to, keep that connection.
Yeah, we honored you two years back, right before the pandemic hit. It was it was a proud moment to see you and your family there. And before the show, you were I'm telling you all, once the documentary on Dr. Terry Mason comes out, I'm putting that out to the universe. Once that comes out and you all are able to see it, it's going to be some amazing stories and chapters from being a former CTA bus driver,
yeah.
to while in medical school, putting food on the table for your family, something you have in common with one of our guests today, Ms. Candace Henley, we'll hear more about. I'm just always amazed and humbled at the people I've been surrounded by, Dr. Mason, mm-hmm. leaders like you who we don't always know your whole story. We see the glory, but we don't always know the story.
I thought you knew.
Well, on that note, thank you for giving us this platform.
Absolutely.
As you said, and always shouting out to thanking Dr. Nguyen and his vision. And our new Cancer Center Director, Dr. Kidiyeski, who is continuing on with the vision of the UI Cancer Center. We're so excited. We're going to actually have him on later this spring, Dr. Mason, so we can give our listeners an opportunity to meet our new Cancer Center Director and hear directly from him about his vision for the UI Cancer Center. And today, this month is March, is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. And while you encourage us not to think about things in this siloed way, you encourage us to think about health in the holistic way. We are happy that we're able to think about certain topics and disease entities or dis-ease, as Louise Hay often says, this concept of March being Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. And with that said, we have two people that are going to help us in the conversation today, Dr. Mason. We have Dr. Sheikha Jain, who is Assistant Professor of Medicine in the Division of Hematology, Oncology, and Cell Therapy, and she will tell us about what all that means. Good morning, Dr. Jain.
Good morning. It's so great to be here. Thanks so much for having me on. It's always so inspiring hearing both of you speak, so I'm honored to be on the show with you today.
Oh, awesome. And Dr. Jain, you also sit in an interesting space, too, as Director of Communication Strategies in Medicine and the Associate Director of Oncology Communications and Digital Innovation. That is... Yeah.
Trying to shake things up a little bit while I'm at UIC.
You're not trying. You're doing it. You're doing it. And one of my, I'm biased here, but one of my favorite community advocates and one of your church, as we say, one of your church members, Dr. Mason, Ms. Candace Henley, Chief Surviving Officer and founder.
Oh, I love that.
That's right. Chief Surviving Officer and founder and executive director of the Blue Hat Foundation. I always love telling people briefly how I met Candace. We were on a panel together at Miles Square a few years back, and I met her through, of course, Sean Trotter, who's always connecting people. And Candace had been doing this work, Dr. Mason, but academics weren't necessarily taking her seriously. We weren't giving her the space that she so well deserved. And when she was on that panel and told her story, I said, "Ma'am, I would love to work with you." She said, "All right, I'm here. Let me know when you're ready." Good morning, Candace.
Good morning. Thank you so much.
I told the clean version, Candace.
I know, right?
The radio-friendly version.
Right. The family-friendly version.
Right.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for your kind words. I'm so humbled by them so much.
And so, Candace, we're going to start with you. Just briefly tell us, March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. Tell us just briefly, why is it so important for you to utilize your platform as a survivor, as an advocate, and as executive director of Blue Hat Foundation during this month, especially to increase access and awareness?
Well, long story short, I'm a soon-to-be 18-year survivor of colorectal cancer. I was diagnosed at 35, and I was misdiagnosed for 6 months, had surgery to remove my ovaries and uterus because no one believed that I had colorectal cancer. It was all female-related. And these are stories that are happening across the country. It's not just me. And there's a rise in the under 45 population of colorectal cancer, and Chadwick Boseman is definitely one that now this generation can associate this with. And so it's important because we now need to ramp up education about this disease more than ever, because we have the under 50 population and because minorities are affected by this disease greatly. We have the highest rate of diagnosis and death of colorectal cancer.
Wow. So Dr. Jain, Candace just said that she was diagnosed at the age of 35. And one of the things that we often hear is that the American Cancer Society and others, the United, have just changed the screening guidelines to 45. But for those, can you just briefly talk about screening and prevention? Just the screening 101, Dr. Jain, like if you are someone listening today, what should you do and know about colorectal cancer screening in terms of age, family history?
Absolutely. So if you're somebody who has no family history of colorectal cancer, you've got nobody in your family has ever had polyps, if you don't have a history of inflammatory bowel disease, if you don't have any blood in your stool, anything like that, then you will most likely, hopefully insurance will cover you starting getting your screenings at age 45. As you just mentioned, Dr. Watson, the new recommendations are, especially for the Black community, to start getting their screenings at the age of 45. Now, that being said, if you're somebody who has those other risk factors, so if you're somebody who has a family member who's had a history of colon cancer or a family member who's had polyps, If you personally have a history of inflammatory bowel disease, so if you've been told you have ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, if you've ever seen any blood in your stool, if you've ever had any radiation to your abdomen, to your belly, to your stomach or your pelvis, or really if you've ever seen a change in your stool. So if you start noticing that you're really constipated often, or you start noticing that there's a change in the color of your stool, like it gets really black or tarry, or even if you notice some drops of blood. If any of those things happen, then you should talk to your doctor about getting screened even earlier, because we have seen, unfortunately, the Black community is seeing very young people who are being diagnosed, just, you know, just as Candace mentioned, are getting diagnosed early. And oftentimes what happens is they're having these symptoms or they have this family history and they don't realize that they should be asking their doctor or mentioning it to their doctor to get screened earlier on than what the standard guidelines are. And there's a lot of different ways to get screened, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. Yeah, but I think it's... Go ahead.
And Dr. Jane, you mentioned something earlier, just for our listeners. You said something that you said, if you are able to get screened, if your insurance will pay for that screening. I want to use this as an opportunity right now to tell our listeners, if you do not have a primary care physician, and what that means is either a family practitioner, an internist, a nurse practitioner, someone where that you call your medical home, please give us a call at 312-996-2000. That's 312-996-2000. That's the UI Health Miles Square. And as one of the oldest federally qualified health centers in the nation, we have the ability to see you despite your ability to pay. We are very proud to be funded through a HRSA-funded clinic, which means that community health centers were started out of the war on poverty in the late 1960s to address the fact that we still understand and know that there's still several people in America that are uninsured or underinsured. So, one of the things we do is colorectal cancer screening and navigation. So I just want to put that out there.
You know, one of the other things I wanted to just say, this is Dr. Mason. One of the things I want to do is that Dr. Watson will tell you I'm biased against always talking about symptoms. Symptoms are never early. They are, in my mind, they're always late. That means you got a problem.
Yep.
So, though I appreciate the information, I always want, because family history, sometimes we don't know family history because we don't always talk about what's happening in the family.
Candace has a statement about that.
Okay. So, I hope I'm not stealing nobody's thunder, but what I say is that if we have a history of eating a certain way, That's to me. In fact, I am pushing that dietary history is probably the most important history for disease that we have, more than our medical history, more than anything else, because we know certain things are going to occur in people who eat a certain way, and less often in people that eat a different way. And I'm going to stop right there. I'm not going to get in my soapbox right now.
No, that's a good segue, Dr. Mason, because Candace, your statement that we know that you said is family secrets kills families.
Yep.
Yes. And tell us a little bit, Candace, about, you know, your discovery of the importance of family history. Because like you said, you were diagnosed at the age of 35, but didn't know you had a family history. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I've been disconnected from my father's side of the family since I was a young child. So I didn't really have any information about them. And it wasn't until after I was diagnosed with colorectal cancer in 2003 and in 2013, my father's sister shared with me, you know, in matter of factly, well, you know, your dad had colon cancer and two other aunts that had passed away also were diagnosed. They were all diagnosed post-autopsy with colorectal cancer. So they never knew that they had it. They died of other causes. And so I was like, well, and she put together this great book that had our family history of photos that went back in generations, but nowhere in this book was medical information. And I was like, why wouldn't you share this information? So for 10 years, I had been walking around trying to figure out where this came from. I knew it didn't come from my mom's side of the family, and I didn't know much about my father's side of the family. And I kept thinking to myself, why are you keeping this secret information? This is information that could have saved my life had I known it. And so from there, it just kept hitting in my head, family secrets kills family, because now my daughters are at risk. And imagine if I had never known where this came from, what could have happened to my daughters? And so that just, and it relates not just to health history, but when we think about our family as a whole and the secrets that we keep, molestation, alcoholism, domestic violence. This statement rings true to all of that.
That's so true. And removing that stigma from illness is so important, Candace. And that's one of the things I appreciate about the message that you put out there, is that you really have been blessed with this ability to remove the stigma from the conversation. So, Dr. Jane, Candace talked about, you mentioned it briefly, and she mentioned it in terms of Lynch syndrome. One of the conversation, I remember vividly having a patient who had been part of a community outreach program, and she had a history of one cancer and heard the term Lynch syndrome. And she said she was so disappointed that through Candace's efforts and through our efforts at Miles Square, that was the first time she had ever heard of that syndrome. And got tested for it and actually had it. And can you tell us a little bit about our listeners about what is Lynch syndrome and its relationship to colorectal cancer?
Yeah, so Lynch syndrome, well, before I talk about Lynch syndrome, I just want to say I totally agree with what everyone else said. And I also want to say I've actually recommended to my patients now since the last year, we've been home a lot more and people have actually been connecting with family more than they have in the past because they're stuck at home oftentimes. They don't have They're just having more family conversations. I've actually told people now is the perfect time to start bringing up questions about family history and having these discussions so that a lot of this stuff comes out into the open so that people are, because depending on when a family member was diagnosed, you will need to get a colonoscopy 10 years before when they were diagnosed or, you know, whatever you and your doctor decide. So I think right now is actually a great time to have these conversations with family.
Dr. Jane, I actually want to repeat. That's such an important point. I actually want to make sure our listeners heard that, because it's for me, when my dad was diagnosed with colon cancer, it put a certain amount of fear in me. And I remember having that conversation with my primary care doctor. And he asked the exact same question that you just asked. What age was it when my dad was diagnosed with colorectal cancer? Because he wanted to make sure that not only me, but my other siblings got screened at least 10 years before that age. And that was an important family conversation for us to have. It's important for my nieces and nephews. It's important for community members to know. It's not just important for us to know that Aunt Sue or Uncle James had a certain type of cancer, but we need to know what age were they when they were diagnosed, because that helps us be able to have a better health history with our providers.
Exactly. I tell my patients that your family members are essentially saving your life by telling you these things. You are actually saving a family member's life by telling them these diagnoses, because then the doctor can actually prevent potentially you from developing a similar type of cancer. So you're actually saving family members' lives by having these conversations. And I think that's incredibly important.
So Dr. Jane, one of the questions, you want to talk to us about Lynch syndrome?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll tell you briefly about Lynch syndrome because I think it's important. So Lynch syndrome is actually a hereditary disorder. What that means is that it's likely to be passed from family member to family member. And it's also called hereditary non-polyposis colorectal cancer, meaning it's a colon cancer that can be caused without polyps. It's also very commonly caused, it also can commonly cause other cancers like uterine cancer, stomach cancer, liver, kidney, brain, and certain types of skin cancers. So the reason it's important to oftentimes, especially if you're young and you have a new cancer diagnosis of any of those types of cancers, you'll often meet with a genetic counselor, or it'll be suggested that you meet with a genetic counselor. And the reason we want you to do that as your doctor is we want to see if any of your genes indicate that you might have this Lynch syndrome. Because if you do have it, then you and your family members will likely need more screening for some of these other cancers and would have to see a doctor a little bit more often. And again, having Lynch syndrome is something where if we know that you have it, then we can screen you better for other cancers and prevent you from getting other cancers as well. So that's why it's really important to know what Lynch syndrome is and know if anybody in your family has any of those types of cancers, because that might mean that there's a history of Lynch syndrome in your family.
Thank you so much for that. Candace, you had briefly.
Can I?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, please, just briefly. And one of the reasons why I fight so much about this is because you have a lot of doctors that are not aware of the early age onset colorectal cancer. And so you have a lot of under 50 populations that are being turned away for colorectal cancer screening. We really need to ramp up this education for colorectal cancer screening, Lynch syndrome, and other hereditary cancer information for primary care physicians.
And so one of the things that you're doing, I know right now, Candace, through an initiative called Screening Madness that's led by the Blue Hat Foundation, is that you're actually utilizing a lot of the effort that goes around in March for basketball tournaments and everything. You're using that as an opportunity to increase awareness around screening. Tell us briefly before the break, what exactly are you doing with this Screening Madness?
So we are utilizing, as you stated, the Screening Madness, the March Madness platform for NCAA basketball. So we're using NCAA basketball themes in our approach for infographics, sharing information about colorectal cancer for various communities, statistics, how it affects communities of color, to raise awareness of colorectal cancer. But it's an attention-grabbing initiative to raise awareness of colorectal cancer, because if you think about the platform that the NCAA has, can you imagine how huge it is? How many people watch NCAA basketball? So we're flooding this information using March Madness, and there's no other sports happening in March. So why aren't we collaborating and using this platform to raise awareness to get that demographic, multiple demographics that watch March Madness? So we're really excited about this this initiative.
And if someone wants to learn more before we go to break, Candace, how can they find out more about Blue Hat Foundation? Is there a website or a phone number?
Yes, they can go to www.thebluehatfoundation.org, or they can call 773-573-2740 or email us at info@bluehatbowtie.org.
You know, Dr. Watson, perhaps after the break, I'd like to have the doctor respond to the question that all things that may be in families are not necessarily genetic.
Great after break conversation. I love that.
Because I don't want us to take our eyes off of the fact, and I want them to comment on dietary issues that create an environment for the growth of polyps and what have you. So we're going to take a short commercial break, and we'll be back with more of The Doctor in the House with Dr. Kareem Watson and our great guest. We're talking about colorectal cancer. If you've got a question, call in, because the time's going to go fast. That number is 773-591-1690, 773-591-1690. We'll be right back with more in The Doctor in the House right after this. Poor in poverty.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
The following is made possible by Dad.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling all over it.
The dad joke. Corny, grown-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
Why do you have to be careful when it's raining cats and dogs? Because you might step in a poodle.
And kids that spend more time with their dads grow up to be smarter, more successful.
Can I tell you a cat joke? Just kidding.
And with any luck, funnier adults.
Why didn't the skeleton go to the dance? Because he didn't have anybody to go with.
Dad jokes rule. So take a moment to make a moment and give your kid a laugh. It's as easy as going to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
That's really funny.
Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking.
Glad to be back. Thank you so much. If you are joining us, this is the first Sunday of The Doctor in the House with Dr. Terry Mason, and I am Dr. Kareem Watson, the first Sunday co-host. And we are so fortunate to have our guest from the UI Cancer Center, Dr. Shika Jain, who is Assistant Professor of Medicine in the Division of Hematology, Oncology, and Cell Therapy. And also we have Ms. Candace Henley from the Blue Hat Foundation, who is the founder and the Chief Surviving Officer of the Blue Hat Foundation. And March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. And if you are joining us, you are here for a great conversation. Prior to the break, Dr. Mason actually wanted us to talk, Dr. Jain, about this concept. One of the things we know, we've heard it several times on this show, is that most cancers are not actually what we call hereditary, meaning passed from family member to family member through genes. Only about less than 10% of what the research shows. So there's something else happening in terms of why certain communities, particularly our communities of color, are oftentimes at elevated risk for cancer, particularly for colorectal cancers. Can you talk a little bit about the difference between family history, hereditary, and even this concept of epigenetics?
Yeah, so let's talk a little about family history first. So there are definitely those colorectal cancers that we mentioned, you know, like people who have Lynch syndrome, another genetic syndrome called familial adenomatous polyposis. So there's some and other cancers that can be caused by a family history. But the point that Dr. Mason was making earlier, which I think is so important, is that lifestyle factors, the way you live, what you eat, the food you put into your body can also contribute to whether you have a higher risk of developing colon cancer or not. So,
what about stress, Dr. Jain? Does stress play a role in that?
Stress can absolutely play a role as well, because really, when you think about it, anything that causes a high level of inflammation in your body at some point can cause your increased risk for cancer, because one of the things that we know can cause cancer is persistent inflammation, persistent stress on a certain part of your body. So yes, absolutely it can. So the things that we really worry about when we look at patients and we're talking about their risk for developing colon cancer. So patients who don't eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. So if you eat very low fruits and vegetables in your diet, if you're not getting them in every day, that's somebody who's going to be at higher risk. People who eat a lot of fried foods, processed foods, diets that are really high in fat, processed meats especially is very high risk, and not very much fiber. People who don't exercise, who don't move around, and who are overweight or obese, they are at high risk. And people who drink alcohol consistently and regularly and a lot, and people who smoke. So I always put smoking at the end, because any patient who I talk to, when I ask them first if they smoke, they think that I'm going to say, oh, you smoke, you're at risk for all these cancers, which is true. Smoking puts you at risk for a lot of cancers. But I also want to remind people, as Dr. Mason so eloquently put, there are so many other lifestyle factors that put you at risk for developing colon cancer. So you need to be eating healthy if you really want to prevent yourself from developing this type of cancer.
And it's also an opportunity for advocacy in the healthy food option. And one of the things I love that's happening right now is that, you know, there is a big movement at the CDC and even the NIH to actually begin to examine structural racism and the impact that structural racism has on food insecurity, cancer screenings, and cancer prevention. Because one of the things that I know that you try to do through your health communications work, Dr. Jain, is remove the judgment and remove the stigma, and to encourage our researchers and our advocacy community to understand that sometimes patients and community members eat what they have. They eat what they have access to. They eat what they know. And so we have to do a better job of removing the barriers, both cost and access, that prevent our communities from having access to healthy food.
I could not agree with you more. And that is, especially in my clinic, you know, I tell my patients, my clinic is a no judgment zone. So whatever you do in your life, you know, I don't go home with you. I don't judge what you do at home. I can only give you the information, and then I can help you come up with resources and ways to hopefully improve your overall lifestyle. But again, there is no judgment. This is just, this is what can happen. This is the thing that we know can cause cancer. How can I help you prevent yourself from getting cancer by changing your lifestyle based on the resources you have? Because you're absolutely right. Structural racism and structural inequities play in so deeply into this type of risk factor for patients. And sometimes there's nothing they can do about it. So we try to work with what we have. And, you know, it could be as easy as going for a walk every day to get some exercise into your day. You know, trying to be a bit more active. I call the couch the black hole of my house. And I say, I can't sit on my couch until I've done something active. Otherwise, I'm not going to get off my couch for the rest of the day. So it's like a black hole. So I try to come up with creative ways we can do lifestyle modification to lower that colorectal cancer risk for a lot of my patients.
One of my colleagues says that sitting is the new smoking, physical inactivity. Yep. Mm-hmm. And Candace, I know you have literally taken this message of colorectal cancer screening, access, and awareness across the pond. We no longer can say that you're a local and a national advocate. You are now an international advocate. So tell us a little bit about Blue Hat Foundation. What is it, why you founded it, and what do you all do?
Okay, so thank you. So I founded Blue Hat after my journey through colorectal cancer and realizing and finding out that there were no resources when I was going through my cancer journey. There were no brown faces that looked like me. There were no under 50 that I could connect to, because everything I read said this person died of colorectal cancer. And so I was like, is there anyone that's living with colorectal cancer? And so I kind of became the unofficial face for me of what it looks like to live for colorectal cancer. But not only that, it was like every time I would go to conferences, I was like the only black face there. And I was like, we really got to do something. And the information for minority communities just wasn't out there, and no one was really doing the work in that space. And I started Blue Hat Foundation after starting an event at my church, Trinity United Church of Christ, Blue Hat Bowtie Sunday. And that was when my family supported me and wanted to do something to raise awareness of colorectal cancer. So we dressed in blue hats, bow ties, and it started taking off, getting awareness. And someone asked one day, so who's putting this on? And I was like, well, it's just me. I'm a colon cancer survivor. And a dear friend says, you really need to do something with this, gifted me my 501c3, and we took off from there. And I found myself being in spaces where the patient voice needed to be, and it wasn't. And that was in research. That was in Congress, that was in any space where we weren't represented and our voices weren't being heard. And so we advocate for health equity. We advocate for screenings for minority medically underserved communities. We push for more money for research. And we also recently, in the last couple of years, added the historical context of research and why it's important for researchers to understand communities of color and their fears of research, genetic testing, and clinical trials, and the trust factor. It doesn't start with Henrietta Lacks and Tuskegee. We have to go back to the beginning and a 1619. And so when you don't understand the context of historical fears, access, and barriers in communities of color, you are still doing our community a disservice because you haven't educated yourself on what's necessary and what language, how you speak to this community, and how you get yourself heard and participation.
And I love that you talked about the historical significance of that, because one of the things I encourage my colleagues to do, Candace, is to, when we talk about medical mistrust, I've been pushing my colleagues to say, let's use the term justified medical mistrust, because black and brown communities didn't just wake up and decide they didn't want to trust the health system. There's been decades and centuries of injustices that have been done against and to black and brown communities that result in often the justified mistrust that many of us have. And so what we have to do is begin to heal and move towards building trusting relationships. And I love, and part of that building of trusted relationships is exactly what Dr. Jane does in her clinic and through our health communications is create a safe, a non-judgment space, but also a space that acknowledges that history of that mistrust. Dr. Jane, you run this thing called health communication. You're director of oncology communications and digital innovation. What is that?
That's a great question. I'm learning more and more every day about what I'm supposed to be doing with that. So I'll tell you, you know, my goal ever since I became a physician is to really figure out how to best communicate very complex and sometimes very scary things to people who don't have the same background, who haven't learned as much about this type of thing because it's not their day to day. It's not their lives. It's not their job. And I think, you know, my father's actually a surgeon, and one thing that always impresses me about him is he's able to take very complicated and complex medical problems and break them down and explain them to people. And he always told me, as a physician, your job, along with taking care of people, is to educate your community. And back when I was growing up, our community was, you know, my neighborhood, his patients, our family members. But now with the rise of social media and just media and the connectivity of everybody, I've found that my community is actually the global community. And so what I have done is I try really hard to take my education and my background, and I try to take the concepts that I've learned and utilize that to educate communities across the board from across the world, using a variety of innovative techniques. And so I use things like digital innovation to try to figure out how to really push the needle and reach people like, you know, like Candace was talking about, who don't necessarily have access to this information, who have a mistrust of the healthcare system. And I'm trying to address the inequities that exist in healthcare kind of from an on the ground, boots on the ground level, trying to figure out where people's mistrust is of the system, try to figure out where their gaps are, where knowledge gaps are, where their misunderstanding is. And then trying to explain things and educate based on facts and studies and breaking things down simply. And so that's where the communication strategies of my job comes in. And I try to not only do that myself, but then teach others how to do that. Because I think this is a system-wide problem in healthcare overall, where we for many years had a very autonomous or a very authoritative role where doctors would just tell people to do things and they were expected to listen. Now I think it's much more of a partnership where you need to work with your patients. Patients come in with their own research. You need to figure out how to suss through the research that they brought. And so I'm trying to use digital innovation in a variety of ways to try to increase and improve our communication with our communities. And then I'm also trying to utilize digital innovation in ways where we can assess where people are getting their information from. Where, you know, is it their churches? Is it TV? Is it family? Is it friends? Is it social media? And then trying to come up with ways to educate them where they go. We see a lot of doctors these days on social media sites like TikTok and Instagram and Twitter, trying to put out messaging that way. But I know many of our communities may not go to those sites. So where can we meet our communities where they get their information? And how can we best improve our communication so we rebuild that trust in the healthcare system, we rebuild our public health messaging, and we also educate while we're doing that so that we can get more of these patients screened, we can save more lives, and we can really address these inequities that are they're really pervasive throughout all of healthcare, and we need to do a lot of hard work to improve upon that. And I think communication and this new digital innovation is really key to working towards closing those gaps in those inequities that exist.
And I want to give a shout out too. I agree with everything you said. One, while the importance of the provider having that communication tool, but also the importance of advocacy for the patient and the survivor and the family member. Like, because my provider had several conversations with me about me getting my colonoscopy based on my family history, but it was actually Candace that convinced me to get my colonoscopy. And I do this work, I live and breathe this work, but I still had that fear. And it was Candace saying, "No, we can't be hypocritical in this work. You actually got to go get this, and whatever, you know, we'll be here for whatever the results are. But we can't let fear, the false expectation appearing real, prevent us from doing what we have to do." So it was Candace and a community member. So, Candace, how have you utilized your platform to do some of that communications that Dr. Jane has talked about, especially within this COVID-19 environment?
Well, you know what? I am on every Zoom call I can find. I am on every platform I can find. And just what Dr. Jane just shared, currently I'm on the Chicago Community Radio Research Partnership, which is a PCORI-funded initiative designed by Public Narrative to do that very thing, to find out where community members are getting their health information, by what platform, via media, social media, where are they getting their trusted health source from? Because that's the issue. It has to be a trusted source, because we have so much misinformation that's going around. And so sitting on other platforms such as, you know, Cancer Research UK, being a patient advocate and sharing, you know, the patient side of research, the patient's, you know, voice and where it needs to be, educating master's in genetics class about the same thing, understanding community engagement. How do you do community engagement? How do you, you know, you talk to communities and encourage, you know, communities of color to talk to them just about their genetic health, not necessarily participating, but just talking. So whatever platform that I can find that resonates with my journey, and of course, my journey encompasses all of that. You know, it's informed consent, it's paternalism, it is, you know, disparities, access barriers, all of that is things, you know, the things that I experience. And so I use my story in every corner I can to show that this is what's missing and this is where it needs to be and this is what we need to have changed.
And you even train other patients. And I also appreciate, sorry to cut you off, but I appreciate you in training, your training and educating other patients and how to basically do that advocacy 101 to be able to cut their story down. Not that we want to minimize or downplay their lived experience, but sometimes you have that elevator ride. You have that quick moment, that 60 seconds to get your story across that may be able to, and you may be communicating that story to a legislator or someone who's in a position to advocate change. And I've seen you firsthand teach people how to get that story condensed. So I really, really appreciate that advocacy that you're doing.
Thank you. It's important because, you know, a lot of times we're dismissed. And if your stories are too long, you know, you kind of get that want look over the face, but it's like, what's the meat of your story? What do you want people to know? What happened to you? What happened to you is the most important part of your story, and how you relate that is very important and how you affect change.
And speaking of that, I got a caller. We had a question that come in, Dr. Jane, that someone said, what is the difference between, they heard this term FIT test versus colonoscopy. Can you describe, just take us back a little bit through the screening 101 for colorectal cancer. Describe what a FIT test is versus a colonoscopy and who can get what?
Absolutely. Great question. So when you talk about screening, there's different tests. So there's stool-based tests. And so what that basically means is you test your poop. That's the easiest way to describe it, where you go to the bathroom and you take a little swab, you swab your stool, and then you put it on a card. So a FIT test is also called a fecal immunochemical test, or FIT. And so that's one way to look for hidden blood in the stool or occult blood in the stool. And what you do is basically you go home, you go to the bathroom, and you'll get a little kit where you have to swab the stool, and then you send in the sample to the lab. And if there's any detection of blood in the stool, then you will need another test like a colonoscopy in order to get further investigated. There are other tests that you can also do like that. For example, a fecal occult blood test that you can do at home. But I want to remind people that if you're going to do these types of tests, you're going to likely have to do them once a year. And I think it's also important to remember, if you do these tests and they find something, you're going to have to go for the more invasive colonoscopy at a later time, because if they find something, then there's concerns that they need to look further into your colon. And if they don't find anything in your colon, they might have to do an upper endoscopy where they look at your esophagus and your stomach, because those types of tests. Yeah.
And before you go, I just want our listeners to, we always try to define terms. So you said this term that people often hear but may not know what it means. You said occult blood.
Yes.
When we use that term, that what we want our listeners to know is that when you do these tests, you as a patient may not see the blood. That's what the term occult means, is that it's blood that can't be seen with someone's naked eye, the regular eye. So it's something that has to be processed. So we don't, one of the things I try to tell our patients, educate our community members, is that if you do the FIT test or any other stool-based test at home, you may not see blood, but just because you do not see blood does not mean that blood may not be there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And one thing that people always tell me, they say, well, I would prefer to do that FIT test or that fecal occult blood test at home, because then I don't have to do that disgusting bowel prep where I have to drink that stuff and I'm going to be pooping to clean out my colon. Now, I want to remind you again that even if you do this test and you send it in, one, you're going to have to do the test every year, and two, if they find anything abnormal, you're going to definitely need a colonoscopy anyway, because the benefit of the colonoscopy is that we can go in, look at your entire colon, and if there's any polyps or anything there that looks abnormal, they can remove them while they're inside your colon, and if it's a precancerous polyp, meaning a polyp that could have turned into a cancer, they can remove it while they're in your colon with the colonoscopy, and they can actually prevent you from developing a cancer.
So this is one of those times, Dr. Jane, when screening actually can be prevention, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you're screening to look for a cancer. If they find a polyp, you can actually remove the polyp altogether and then prevent you from getting cancer. And I think that is so important. The reason that I recommend to my patients colonoscopies over these FIT tests and over these fecal occult blood tests is because once you get it done, if there is a polyp there, they can prevent you from having cancer if they're able to remove the polyp.
We're going to take a quick caller. We have, and then after we take this caller, we want to really also discuss the importance of diet and food, and not just the word diet, but really the foods that we eat and can consume. We talked about it a little bit, but Loretta, you have a question for us today. Good morning.
Good morning. I would like to address this to Candace. Since you had that diagnosis some years ago, 18, I would imagine, if it occurred in 2003, what specific lifestyle changes have you made in your life to prevent any further occurrence of this? I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, when I was diagnosed, I was already preparing for my first bodybuilding contest. So I was already eating chicken, fish, and turkey. I didn't have a diet that was, you know, full of fat. So I was already exercising. So mine was a hereditary nature, which is, as we discussed earlier, Lynch syndrome. But since then, I continue to exercise daily. I continue to eat as best as I can, but considering that I have had my large intestine removed, I now have to be creative with my diet to control my bowels, because since having my large intestine removed, my system moves a lot faster than everybody else's. So I've had to be creative in my diet. I still don't eat a lot of fried foods. I can't process it, and it makes me nauseous. But I still eat certain vegetables, fruit, chicken, fish, and turkey. I don't eat any red meat at all. Unfortunately, I can't process it. So I don't have a diet that was out of sorts to begin with. I'm happy about that. But I would encourage anyone that's listening, if you are not exercising, walk. Get up and walk. If you are eating fried foods, I totally understand. You know, you have to do what you have to do, but incorporate exercise in that. Drink water, because it's healthy, and talk with your doctor about what he thinks could be beneficial to your health in your diet and lifestyle, because we all have different diets.
And Candace, if anyone's seen you, you definitely don't look like what you've been through, and you definitely look like you have this healthy lifestyle. It shows up in your skin, but I also want to highlight.
Kareem, I'm sorry if I interrupt you, but I have to say something here. The International Agency on the Research for Cancer has already classified red meat as group 2, and group 2 as probably carcinogenic. And they put all processed meats, that's bacon, hot dogs, sausages, all of the processed meats, most of which are in the deli counter, they have processed them, put them in the category as group 1 carcinogens. That is things that definitely cause cancer. And so we have got to stop acting like that's not true. Mm-hmm. And we are. Mm-hmm. And so what we have to do is that, see, I don't believe necessarily. I mean, the hereditary stuff I get, but a lot of the familial stuff is because we eat the same stuff. And we pass the way we eat from generation to generation. But in their report, they said 4 strips of bacon or 1 hot dog increases your colorectal cancer risk by 18%. So yeah. I don't know how much clearer you can get. And we are not eating enough roughage, you know, and drinking enough water, because we're allowing these carcinogens to be in contact with the colonic wall too long because the stool is not moving. And so I do not want to leave. And you know me, this is the song I sing everywhere I go, because the data is overwhelming. And if you are not a hopeless victim of genetic, most of the diseases that we have are not genetic.
Right.
They are not. That's a very small minority of cases. Most of this stuff is done by modifiable lifestyle. And that's what people don't want to hear. And you can get a colonoscopy every day, but a colonoscopy will not prevent cancer. It will help find it earlier, but it won't prevent it. And I think that's the message I want to make sure we leave. And I'm not, and I look, I'm due for my colonoscopy, and I've been getting it every, according to the thing, I get it every, this is my 10th year. I'll be 70 this year. And so I plan to get my colonoscopy like I've already been doing it with Dr. Hall. But it's just, I don't want people to leave this show that they are hopeless. If you're eating salami, bologna, processed meats, hot dogs, sausages, bratwurst, all that stuff, you are participating in increasing your risk for colorectal cancer.
Well said, Dr. Mason. Well said. And we talked about a little earlier about this concept of anti-inflammatory foods.
That's right.
And this whole concept of anti-inflammatory foods, it's a big word, but it's simple. It's green leafy vegetables. It's fruits that are high in fiber. All those things.
Anything
help,
with a lot of color.
Anything with a lot. You should be eating the rainbow. All those things help decrease that inflammation. We are almost at the top of the hour. And Candace, what would you like our listeners to know? As we know that March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month.
But we got 30 seconds.
We got 30 seconds, Candace. What do you want to take us out?
I want them to go to thebig10.org/screeningmadness, take the pressure, get screened. Don't fear the prep, fear the disease, get screened.
All right.
All right. Let the church say amen on that one.
And thank you, Dr. James, so much for joining us today. And I'm hoping this partnership will be an everlasting partnership.
Oh, I think this is a wonderful thing. Yeah. But I do want us to get those messages out about the food, because we are participatory in causing the leading causes of death.
That's true.
So we just need to stop it. Just stop it and put the truth out there. I don't care if people like it or not. I got to tell you the truth.
It will set us free.
It set us free from disease. Thank you all so much for listening. That next voice you're going to hear is that of our gospel sister, Mrs. Pam Morris-Walton, who's coming to make a joyful noise over the radio station. And until next week at this same time and station, may God continue to bless each and every one of you with health and strength as I leave you now in peace.